Welcome to the Fertility Stories podcast. This is your host, Mary Sauden, naturopath and fertility coach. I help women go from frustrated, overwhelmed, and isolated to calm, confident, and in control of their fertility. I'm passionate about helping women get pregnant and stay pregnant. Each week, I have a real and empowering conversation with everyday women and men struggling with fertility to bring you hope, comfort, and support. This is our story. Welcome to the Fertility Stories podcast. My guest today is Kelly. Welcome to the podcast, Kelly.
Hi, Dr. Mary. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. Yep. I'm Kelly. My last name is Skroy. So when people see the spelling, they're going to be like, what the heck does that say? I'm a licensed mental health counselor. I live here in Florida. Born and raised in Connecticut, where I'm also a licensed therapist as a second career. Went back to school in my 40s when my kids were a little bit older to get my master's degree. And so now I just work with people on all kinds of things, all kinds of issues, all kinds of struggles and challenges. And I really think stepping into this later in life has been like my true passion. And part of my early struggles was infertility. So
Yes. Tell us more about that.
So, you know, so my children are 23, almost 24. I have triplets. I have two sons and a daughter. And, I always had like period issues, but everyone I knew had period issues. So like there was never anything wrong. I did have endometriosis and I had some surgery for that. But they always told me it would be no issue to get pregnant. So my husband and I decided, you know, let's get pregnant. So I stopped my birth control. And like that month, the same month, I never got a period. And I was like, holy crap, I can't be pregnant this easy. And I wasn't. My periods never restarted again from that point on. They weren't sure why. No one could give me any definitive reason. So I kept having to go in like to see the doctor to like get a shot to, as my daughter would say, you just got a shot to like start my period. And then my OBGYN said, well, let's, you know, start you on, like, I basically wasn't ovulating. So he's like, let's start you on Clomid, which is the devil's drug, by the way, for anyone who has ever been on it, you can relate. Clomid was awful. And I had to do the whole temperature thing and the chemistry kit on the bathroom sink in my office. And month went on and on and on. And my journey was really frustrating because when I went in finally after about a year to see my OBGYN again, I went in with my list of temperature charts and, you know, all of this stuff. And like I said, Clomid was miserable. So I was a moody monster most of the time. And oh my gosh, as I'm telling the story, I'm thinking about this one time, like, you know, people saying, hey, you have to like, you don't use a really good, you can't use lubrication. So you have to use something, try egg whites. It's a really good conductor. And I remember having the freaking turkey baster and like whipping it across the bedroom because the egg white wasn't working. I'm like, what is this craziness? You know, like we're using a freaking turkey baster and this isn't even like fun anymore. I hate everything about this. Just go away. But I walked into that OBGYN's office and handed him like my temperature charts. And he's like, well, this means nothing to me. And I'm like, what do you mean this means nothing to me? You've had me doing this for a year. Like seriously, a year I've been doing these temperature things.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, they don't mean anything to me. So, and I'm like, well, then they certainly don't mean anything to me. And why am I doing them? So I got super frustrated. And I had a cousin, actually my husband's cousin, had just had a baby, and I knew that they had done in vitro. So we met with them for dinner and we were asking all kinds of questions, and I ended up going to see their specialist.
Okay.
And so did a whole bunch of, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, I ended up getting pregnant with injections and inseminations. But, you know, that in itself was a journey of, like getting the pharmacy and getting that paid for and having it shipped and like scheduling the blood work, like how many injections and how much blood work and this week. And then, you know, oh my God, the whole memories, it's like coming back to me now. The, all the appointments, you know, the frustration.
How did you deal with the frustration of everything?
Not well. Honestly, like I said, I whipped the turkey baster across the room. You know, I remember my first cycle on fertility on the injections. It was really short. Like I did like 3 or 4 days of shots, and then they did my HCG and they had me using like those suppositories to fluff up my uterine lining.
Yes.
And if you've tried them, then when you don't get pregnant, that stuff has to come out. So I got my period that month, and it was, gosh, I remember it vividly. It was New Year's Eve, and I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't stop crying. I couldn't get out of bed. I felt crazy. Like I was losing my mind. And as I, like, I would get up and then get back into bed and get up and get back into bed. And we were supposed to go to a party and nothing fit me because like, I was so bloated from all this medication.
Right.
And I couldn't stop crying. And I was like, I'm just, this is never going to work. And so I did not handle it well. It was a really, like I said, you know, and I think so many people can relate to this, that sex wasn't fun. We hated each other.
It was like a chore.
Yeah, it was torture. And it was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm like, this isn't worth it. And leaving the house was torture because I would go to the grocery store and see all these people with their kids, and I was miserable, and I didn't want to go to family parties, and I was so sick of everybody asking me, like, geez, when are you guys going to start a family? What are your plans? And I'm like, are you kidding? And like, you know, you don't tell everybody when you're going through this.
Right.
But at some point you lose your mind and you're like, oh my God, do you think like we're not trying?
How do you deal with those triggers? Like for instance, pregnancy announcements or seeing friends and family pregnant or people asking you like, when are you having kids or when?
So, you know, now if I knew then what I know now, I think I probably would have been way more prepared. I think the worst part for me was not being prepared to have any concerns with pregnancy, right? I just never considered it was going to be an option, like a problem.
Right.
So I didn't know how to deal with it. Today, you know, I have so many more boundaries. Like, for instance, I see people, a lot of my clients will talk to me about how they're already trying to get pregnant and they tell everybody we're trying to get pregnant. And, you know, that just seemed like a big thing. Like you would send out a birth announcement that says, oh, by the way, we're getting ready to get ready to get ready to get pregnant. I'm like, you don't have to announce this to the world, right? This, it should be able to be a more private thing. When I was seeing people out, I would remember that I didn't know their story either. So like, for instance, our cousins who had infertility issues, I didn't know their story. So assuming that everybody just got pregnant so easy and didn't have any struggles, I would remind myself that I didn't know what had happened in their life that was making it easier or harder. You know, if they had gotten pregnant easier, I didn't know what their story was. And really, I think one of the biggest struggles for me was reminding myself that I wasn't a failure, because as a woman, I felt like this was my job. Like this was my purpose, right? We are told since we're little girls, you get married, you have a baby. And I couldn't do that right. Like I couldn't even get that part right. So I had a really hard time accepting that there was like, I wasn't just this broken, damaged version of womanhood. And I think connecting with other people, and we're so much more accepting of it today. I'm so thankful for how far our society has come.
Yes.
In talking openly about all kinds of issues, but especially for women, because this idea that we're supposed to be the perfect mothers, the perfect, mm-hmm. you know, we're both supposed to have the perfect womb, and then we're supposed mm-hmm. to be amazing mothers and never get frustrated and always feel awesome and keep it all together.
Yes.
And there was nothing, I can tell you, when my babies were born, there was nothing about me that was keeping it together. Mm-hmm. You know, even after my pregnancy was scary as hell because I was carrying triplets, mm-hmm. I do have to mention that my second month on medication with inseminations, I got pregnant. And I found out I was pregnant about a week and a half before going on a ski trip to Vail, because we mm-hmm. had decided we'd been through enough mm-hmm. and we were going to go on vacation. So, of course, that's when I got pregnant, 2 weeks before I found out. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I ended up taking a pregnancy test the day my period was supposed to start, which they yelled at me for, because obviously that can be false.
Right.
And I went into the doctor. And this is kind of a funny story. And for everybody, you've been through so much anyway, right? So you can appreciate mm-hmm. the story. So I go into the doctor's office and they want me to pee in a cup so they can test it. So I pee in a cup and I had to poop at the same time. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I'm like, you're in the doctor's office and I had to poop. I'm mm-hmm. like, this is ridiculous. So now I have to give them this cup. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in the waiting room and I'm pacing the floor, like pacing. And there's a new couple in there. You could tell it was their very first appointment. They must have been like more stressed out because of me, because mm-hmm. I couldn't sit still. And the nurse, two of the nurses, they came to the door and they called me in. They're like, it's positive. And I go, no, it's not. And they're like, yes, it's positive. I go, no, that's not true. I'm like, it can't be positive. And I'm like, I have cramps. I'm going to get my period. And I must have looked like I was going to pass out. Because the next thing I know, I have each of them on each side of me holding me up. Mm. So I don't know if I like disassociated, if I just was like, who knows where I went. But I was like, no, it's not true.
Mm-hmm. You were in denial.
I was, you know. And so I was late for work and mm-hmm. I couldn't get out of the parking garage to get back on the highway. And oh man, it was hysterical. I called my husband and I'm like, Tom, I don't know where the on-ramp is. I'm so late for work. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm screaming at him on the phone. And he's like, Kelly, what did it say? And I'm like, it's positive. I was a lunatic. I was a total lunatic. Wow. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to be late. I literally, everything about this whole thing, I felt like a mad woman, like a crazy psycho. I couldn't get myself together. I couldn't get a grip on life. Mm-hmm. It's so not like me, because I always had it together, you know?
Right.
So seeing myself in this way, like a crazy woman, was so odd for me. So we mm-hmm. did go on this ski trip and I skied. It was, now at this point, I only am pregnant. I have no idea what I'm pregnant with. Mm-hmm. I go on this ski trip to Vail. I ski the first day in Vail and I start to panic, like, oh my God, someone's going to take me out and I'm going to lose this whole pregnancy mm-hmm. you know, because I worked so hard to get here. So I ended up selling my lift ticket and I sat and drank hot chocolate and read romance mm-hmm. novels for 6 weeks while he skied. Yeah.
Sounds cozy.
Great. So then we got back a week later. I have this appointment to do an ultrasound. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, cool. So we go in for the ultrasound and immediately we see two sacs and I'm like, oh, Tom, there's two. We're done. We never have to do this again. And so the nurse practitioner doing the ultrasound, she's like, I'm just going to look around. And I'm like, well, what are you looking for? Mm-hmm. And she's like, just to make sure there's only two. And I'm like, well, how many do you think there are? So she's like, here's a third. And I'm like, a what? She's like, there's three.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And he just is sitting there like staring and I start cracking up. So now I have this, you know,
wow.
vaginal ultrasound going on and I'm hysterically laughing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, do people laugh? She goes, some people cry, some people laugh. And she says to him, do you want to come see the heartbeat, you know, see the sacs? He's like, no, I'm just going to sit right here. Yeah.
He was stunned.
Stunned. And now here's the frightening part. So here we are in this doctor's office, and we just got this news that we're having triplets, and they bring us into see one of the fertility doctors, who then tells us that we should consider reducing to two because the chance of losing the whole pregnancy is very high. So wow. We barely had any chance to even digest this information. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Like, what? And they're like, well, you should basically go with, they'll go in and, remove one of the fetuses. They'll just do that. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't understand. So that was like, we started telling our families that we only had two because we had no idea. Gosh, I tell the story. Everything about this was like effed up. Right? We're talking 20 something years ago, how messed
crazy
up this was, right? Who does this? So we didn't even have time to like digest this news. And like, I joke about a lot of this stuff because it was probably the way I dealt with it best. Like, I finally fit into my trying to get pregnant genes like that day. Now I'm like, everything's back to normal and I'm pregnant with triplets, you know?
That's crazy.
Gone are those days. Yeah. We ended up going down to Yale. We met with Yale's maternal fetal group and had an ultrasound there and, talked to the doctors, and we essentially got as much of the factual information as we could. I wanted to weigh risk benefits here. I wanted to know if I did reduce what my risk was of losing the whole pregnancy as opposed to keeping the pregnancy. They had told me at the fertility specialist when they did my ultrasound that the heart rate on baby C looked slow. So they were guessing that that would spontaneously abort on its own.
Okay.
And when we went to Yale, they told me there was no discrepancy in A, B, and C. All their heart rates looked fine. And that I had a higher risk of losing the whole pregnancy by selectively reducing than I did by carrying as long as I could.
Right.
So I switched up to UConn in Connecticut to their maternal fetal group. And they followed me really closely. And I ended up going.
How far along?
I went 30 weeks. I'm trying 30 weeks, 5 days.
Wow.
So, yeah, my kids were really small. My biggest, Ryan, was 312.
Wow.
My other son, Jared, was 215. And my daughter, her name's Allison, she was only 15. She was the most stressed.
Oh, my goodness.
But Ryan was the most sick because he just kind of was lazy and took off. Now, the ironic part of this is that baby C was my son, Jared, who weighed 215. And being the one that they thought would spontaneously abort on his own, he was my healthiest. He came home first. He was my strongest. He was like a rock star after he
was amazing.
He just did what he had to do. He grew and ate and functioned and, he came home after 6 weeks in the NICU.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we would have reduced our healthiest one. And I can't imagine life without him anyway. He's a character on his own, all on his own. You know, he brings, they all bring their own joy into the world, but he's like that kid, you know, he's that one true soul. So yeah, but crazy times.
Yeah. That's a crazy, amazing story.
Yeah. They came home a week apart. Ryan, my sickest, came home on my due date, and they were born in August, 1998. And all of a sudden it was the beginning of October, and I had been driving back and forth to the hospital so many times, breaking all the rules early on. I drove by myself because I spent every day from, morning to night in the NICU with them. But all of a sudden I noticed that the leaves had turned, and I was like, holy crap, it's fall. Like, where did this
where did summer go?
Yeah. And I had bought them these tiny, tiny Halloween costumes, and all the nurses were like, oh, you'll be lucky if they're even home by then. Aww. And lo and behold, they were all home by Halloween. They were in their little costumes that were 12 sizes too big for them.
Oh.
And the day that Ryan came home, so he came home last, and then I called the NICU the next day to see if I could send them all back.
Mm.
Like, what do you mean? I'm like, I can't do this. You have to come get them.
Like, three kids.
This is way too much. You need to take them back, and I'll just come get them one at a time. And they're like, no, that's not how this works. I'm like, yeah, it has to be. I can't do this. So, you know, I talked a little bit earlier about feeling like a failure as a woman for not being able to get pregnant. That feeling of failure, gosh, that carried on for so long because I felt like I failed my kids because my body shut down.
Mm.
I was like, they admitted me to UConn about 2 days before I delivered. And I told my specialist, I said, you know, the night before he delivered me, I said, I feel like I have the flu, like I'm dying. And he's like, we're going to do some blood work in the morning. And he came in the morning at like 6 o'clock. And I'm like, I don't feel good at all. He's like, yeah, I wonder why. He's like, you're basically right now, your body's poisoning you. So we're going to get them out pretty soon. So I think my platelet count was borderline to the point where if it dropped any lower, they would have had to put me under instead of doing a C-section.
Oh, wow.
I spent the first 24 hours on mag sulfate, didn't even see my kids, didn't get to hold my kids because they were too small.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they were born and they got whisked away.
Yeah.
I heard them cry. They got whisked away. And then I got put in a dark room pretty much upside down on mag sulfate. And yeah, that was crazy too, because the family got to see my kids before I ever saw them.
Oh my goodness.
And that was so, so much of it was, I think hopefully today they do things so much better, but it was like so traumatic as a mom.
Right. Not to see your babies.
Yeah. And I don't think we think about that. Like moms that have babies by fertility that have to leave their babies in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do have to say that it was a blessing for me that I had to get up and go to the NICU to see my babies. Because my sister-in-law had her children via C-section and they brought her children. So when she left the hospital, she could barely walk. When I left the hospital, they had told me to go down the stairs backwards to not pull on my incision. And I got halfway down the stairs and I was like, oh, shoot, I'm supposed to turn around.
Oh, gosh.
So like I had to get up. There was no one bringing me my babies. So it did me the benefit of healing faster and just getting up and moving, but so many aspects. And then there came the weeks after they came home where all we did was cry and just say we just wanted to have a baby.
Right.
And why are we being slammed with three babies that have reflux? I mean, you know, exorcist vomiting across the room.
Right. That's a lot. I mean, three babies.
Yeah.
It's very overwhelming.
I say it. I'm like, but you know what? I was so stupid because people asked me, I was so like, I guess I was in denial or unaware or just like pleasantly ignorant at that point in time, because people are like, how are you going to do this with three babies? And I'm like, I'm just going to do it. I don't have a choice. It's not like they gave me a check the list and I selected the number three. So I'm like, I don't know any different. So I think that my husband knew, like he was keyed in, but I was completely in the dark about how hard this was going to be. And I think that's a good thing. I think I was stressed out enough about not going into preterm labor, you know?
Right. Did your whole fertility journey change you?
Oof. Well, it changed me a lot. It made me realize how strong I am. Like it made me realize how amazing our bodies are. I think it made me appreciate things a lot differently. So unfortunately for me, my marriage did not make it through. I think that having three babies at once changed our dynamic. It changed my relationship with my husband and it changed his relationship as a dad. He got very freaked out about supporting a family of five now instead of just a family of three and having a chance to ease into this. he got very focused on the financial aspect of things and working more and, you know, taking on more work responsibility. And he also got super focused on our family was all that matters, meaning everything we did was with the kids, for the kids. And we didn't have a relationship outside of them. So that changed me a lot in the sense that I never got married to go through all that and then end up divorced.
Oh gosh.
And we had talked about it years later, but I think that I talked to a lot of families with multiples and it's very difficult. It changed me in ways that I wouldn't expect to change. Like getting together with other moms of multiples was depressing for me because they just talked about how bad it was. And I just loved having my kids. I didn't, you know, to me, they were three separate individuals. We did everything. I never called them the triplets. They had three birthday cakes. They were treated separately, like as different people, as best as we could. So it definitely changed me in that way. I don't have anything to compare it to, so I don't want to say that it made me more connected to my kids as a mother, because I can't compare that to anything. I know that becoming a mother felt like sometimes painful, like my heart was outside of my chest.
Right.
And I know other women have said that didn't do fertility. So I'm not sure if that's just a mother thing.
Yes.
But I definitely learned to trust my body a lot more. As a result, I paid attention to those silent cues that my body gave me that something wasn't right. Or for instance, during my pregnancy, every single time I went to the doctor or ended up in the emergency room or into the hospital because I was having contractions, I would do like a cervical exam. And we knew at that point, I was so sick, we knew that I wasn't going to deliver because of preterm labor. But every time they did an exam, it threw me into worse contractions. So I told the doctors, I said, they're not doing this exam anymore. My cervix is not dilated. I'm having contractions because I have three babies in this body. We're not happy.
No.
So I really began to advocate for myself. I had to advocate for my children because my son Ryan would hold his breath every time. He couldn't pull the suck, swallow, and breathe thing together. So he would try to eat so fast that he'd latch on to the nipple and then turn blue.
Oh gosh.
So they weren't going to let him come home because he hadn't figured out how to eat. And I was like, listen, he knows you just have to pull the bottle out. You can't walk around the house talking to other people and feed him. You have to pay attention to him.
Yes.
So when the nurses were walking around the, special care unit, having conversations while they fed him, he'd turn blue. So at home, I paid attention, we knew it would happen.
Right.
So I learned to advocate for what was best for me and for my kids. And I think that I didn't speak up like that before then, I was more timid.
That's excellent that the journey really changed you in a positive way.
Yes, I definitely think so. It had some negatives too, right? I mean, part of healing and part of becoming the best version of myself has been struggles, has been, facing those challenges. One of the things, and this is maybe related or not, there's no proof of this, but I developed breast cancer right before I turned 41. And we're not sure if the amount of fertility medications that I got or that any of us get going through this process may have contributed to it.
Oh my goodness.
So something to keep, keep an eye on for women that have gone through fertility to be really
vigilant.
I think really vigilant is really important for all of us today because of the incidence of breast cancer, but especially with fertility medications. And, when you think about the amount of hormones that they pump through our bodies. So again, I don't have any, there's no research or proof that says, hey, you did fertility, so you got breast cancer. But that was another one of my challenges. And
that's a big challenge.
It was a big with challenge. Cancer. Yeah, it's been just, it was 10 years in September. I had a bilateral.
Congratulations.
Cancer. Thank you. Yeah, 4 months of chemo, 6 weeks radiation, rough times. Wow,
that's rough.
Yeah, but you know, we persevere. I think that as women, we have to really recognize just how resilient we are. We don't give ourselves credit for our resilience.
Yes, yes, I agree with you.
We just overcome, no matter what, we always just seem to come back stronger. And I say that when I joke around with my woman clients, like about men, and I'm always like, well, they're a little simpler, you know, and not in a negative way, but we just, women just have to recognize how we can empower each other because we're so, our bodies are so resilient. My body went through hell several times and managed to come back out, and it may not look as pretty as I'd like it to after all that, but
still, you're here. You're strong.
Yes. You know, all the times I thought about having a tummy tuck to get rid of those stretch marks, my kids were like, Mom, don't do that. Those are our love marks for you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you're not wearing
love marks.
Those are your love marks.
Yeah, I love that.
That's what we did for you. That's so you'd never forget us. I'm like, oh boy, I can never forget you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
how do you
go ahead?
Yeah. I was going to ask, how do you help empower women in terms of like the coaching services that you do?
Yeah. So my passion is really working with women in any phase of like life transition, right? Like, gosh, I work with a lot of women that are coming out of relationships. A lot of them are abusive, or at least emotionally abusive, which sometimes is just worse than physical. I work with women that are becoming empty nesters, that are like so dedicated to their kids that then they come out of the other side of it and they're like, holy crap, who am I? I work with women that are divorcing, that are retiring, you know, any transition, any stage of life transition. I work with new parents, women that are new moms, that this has become one of my favorites lately. Because I work with new moms who feel like they're totally failing because they can't get their kid to stop crying. And really new dads too. I'm seeing how new dads just like feel useless. But like as a new mom, not knowing what to do and having everybody expect that you know what to do.
Right.
Like it was born into us to like have all the answers. And, you know, and I tell them, look at the book, you know, What to Expect When You're Expecting is a guide. It did nothing for me because nobody said what to expect when you're expecting triplets. No one said to me, know what to expect after your baby comes and you hate your life. And I think that is one of the things that's been happening a lot with recently, especially with COVID. People are, they've been stuck home and there's no outlet. And I'm seeing a lot of new parents that are like, we're losing our minds because we can't get away from each other and we don't even know what our kid needs. And, you know, there's no way to figure it out until they're old enough to tell you. And I really just try to let them know you're normal. How you feel is normal. Like I hated my life for so long till my kids were about 10 months old before I was like, whoa, this is getting real now. My UPS driver thought I ran a daycare. He's like, wow, you have a daycare in here? I'm like, no, these are mine.
That's so funny.
We were like romper room with every toy you could imagine. Trying to feed three babies at once. And
crazy.
It's crazy, right? Like explain, you don't have to always be structured or know what you're doing. So I really help women. One of the biggest things is to break that idea, the expectations and the roles that we've been trained since childhood that we're supposed to play, right? This belief system that we're supposed to follow this particular path. And these are how we play out our life as daughters, as moms, as, you know, women, the things that are expected of us, get married, have babies. That's not in everybody's plan these days.
No.
And then the part where, you know, never let them see a sweat, that thing. I joke around about this perfume commercial from years ago for that Anjali perfume.
Okay.
And it was really, it's an old commercial. I bet if you like YouTube it, you can find it. And so here comes this woman and all you see is like her pencil skirt and her skinny legs and her high heels. And she's like, I can bring home the bacon and I can fry it up in a pan. and never let you forget you're a man. And it's all about how this perfume is going to make you like, you know, Wonder Woman. Mm. And I'm thinking, look at what we were telling our women.
Right.
We had to go to work and look sexy in a pencil skirt and high heels, then go to the grocery store, then come home and cook dinner. And remind our men that they're still men. Like, how exhausting is that?
Plus kids.
Plus kids. So, and running into another mom who had twins and then a younger son, like they were, you know, we Irish triplets, I guess, into the grocery store and like talking and realizing that we didn't ever talk because we were so intimidated by each other because each other looked like we had it all together. And then we talked to the grocery store and realized neither one of us had it all together. And we became fast friends because we stopped pretending or trying to look like we had it figured out. And we were able to sit down and tell each other just how miserable we were without judging each other.
That's perfect.
So I think for women, recognizing that you don't have to pretend that everything's great because there's so many of us that know that it wasn't great for us either. I said to a client a couple weeks ago, like, I get it. I had to walk away from my daughter one day because all she did was scream at me. And I had a therapist. She was like, you know, 3 months old. I had a therapist at the time because I was losing my mind. And she's like, is she screaming or is she screaming at you? And I'm like, well, I don't know if she's screaming in my face. And she's like, well, what happens if you move your face? Does she keep screaming? And I'm like, all she does is scream. And she's like, well, maybe she's just screaming and it's not at you. And that made a big impact on me. Like, she's just uncomfortable. But I totally understood like where people get so frustrated and they want to shake their babies. I had to leave the room because I was like, oh my gosh, I need to get, I'm going to lose my mind. Because sleep deprivation is real.
The real thing, that's for sure.
And postpartum's real. And all these things, like, we have to take the time to recognize that this is not just us failing as women. It's real stuff. It's real life.
I agree. Now, what is your, what is your message to women out there struggling with infertility?
Reach out, talk about it. Talk about it with people that you feel safe talking about it with. Don't, you know, don't take it all on yourself and expect that don't think something's wrong with you because you're struggling. I think today, one of the things we have to keep in mind is the extent of just illness in general. And as a mental health therapist, even mental health, right? Mental illness. There's so much garbage in our atmosphere and in our food and in our society, like, that we're breathing in chemicals and just so much stuff. It's not a surprise that we struggle with so many more things now. You know, our, the hormones in our food, especially, look at how quickly our kids are growing up. So if that's altering growth, it has to be altering our body's chemistry and our ability to reproduce on a, at a natural level. I think that there's a lot to that to keep in mind. And I'm always like willing to talk to anyone who feels like they're struggling. You know, my, my story, my journey was a while ago, but you know, retelling
it's still
it right
relevant.
Now, oh my gosh. Retelling it right now. I feel like I'm living it again. So it stays real.
For sure. How can people reach you?
So they can find me by Googling my name, Kelly Scroy. I come up everywhere. You can find me on Facebook at Kelly Bannon Scroy or on Instagram at Kelly Scroy. I have a website that's, what is it? KellyScroyLMHC.com. And I'm pretty much, everything's out. I think I'm pretty much out there. So I think I'm on LinkedIn. If someone looks on LinkedIn.
Okay. Awesome. I'll have all of the links on your social media at the episode show notes. So anyone who wants to reach you, they can just click on the link and it'll bring, bring it right back to you. Thank you so much, Kelly, for taking the time to share your story and your amazing insights.
Thank you for having me. I hope some of it was helpful and comical, if nothing else.
How awesome was that? If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe, and I would love to receive a review from you. And let's keep this conversation going. What is your fertility journey like? How are you choosing to be compassionate with yourself? Subscribe to the Fertility Stories podcast. I've got a new episode coming your way next week. And until then, talk soon.